Chase William DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, live. It's all presented by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. You can also listen to us on the Game Nashville app. Let's say hello to Seth Walder from ESPN. He is their analytics expert. Does great stuff for them. Seth, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Appreciate you doing this. So we're all watching the Thursday night football game last night. And guys, I mean, we had touchdowns. I mean, it was actually a fun football game. It wasn't like the last few Thursday night games. But somewhere in the third, fourth quarter, the news comes out that Christian McCaffrey has been traded from the Panthers to the 49ers. When you look at this trade and how it all went down between these two teams, what is your assessment? And I know you have some grades.
Yeah, that's right. I did grades for ESPN.com last night right after the trade went down and the terms came out. I think this is a mistake for San Francisco. I totally get the appeal. You can see it. You're adding a versatile weapon in McCaffrey to be on the field at the same time as Deebo Samuel. And, like, you know, I can see the possibilities are sort of endless, and that sounds really nice. But there are so many red flags here. We're talking about a veteran running back, which is a non-premium position. Even for a receiving back, I think that's still true. We're talking about an injury-plagued Christian McCaffrey. He's missed 23 out of 33 games between 2020 and 2021. That's, to me, a really not a player that I want to be giving this much draft capital up if I'm San Francisco. I'm sure they look at the NFC and say, hey, you know, there's not a lot of good teams here. We could be that team, and they want to make that move. But this was a costly move, and I think that most likely outcome is they will regret it.
Now, you bring up running backs. Obviously, the Tennessee Titans have a unique running back in Derrick Henry, who is just a freak of nature physically. He's come off the foot injury from last year. The numbers, I think, have, especially the last few weeks, have been good, but they fall off in the second half. The yards per carry, not exactly where they have been, and he was asked yesterday about hitting the home run, that he hasn't had that yet. When you watch Derrick Henry and you look at some of the underlying numbers, what do you see?
I think that there's really poor numbers for Derrick Henry this year. And I think that this is actually something that stretches back to last season, even before his injury. So Derrick Henry this season has negative 41 rush yards over expectation. And that's from NFL Next Gen Stats. And the way they measure that is essentially at the time of handoff, based on the position of all 22 players on the field, which way they're facing, how fast they're moving, they can set a mean expectation of how many yards an average back would get in that spot. Derrick Henry has underperformed what the model would have expected from an average player. So he's got 41 fewer yards than you would think from an average player. And last season, he also was only at basically an average rate. And that is a huge difference from earlier in his career, where Henry was averaging seasons on end, over a yard per carry over expectation, which is remarkable stuff, but we know he's been a remarkable player. I think that last season was shielded by the volume, but Henry's decline actually began last year, and I think we're continuing to see it this year.
We'll talk with Seth Walder, ESPN Analytics. Now, Seth, this Titans defense, it was really good last year, one of the best defenses in the National Football League last year, and it was sort of a surprise to everybody because no one predicted that. But with Big Jeffrey Simmons in the middle and Harold Landry and Bud Dupree on the outside and Kevin Byard at safety, this defense really picked up their play last season. And this season, even with all of the injuries, more notable the injury to Harold Landry, this team has been able to, or this defense has been able to, still remain one of the better defenses in the National Football League. Even at this point last year, this year they're better at this point than they were last year. What does the analytics say about this defense?
Well, I think that you mentioned Jeffrey Simmons, and I think he's having his best year as a pro. So I think that it starts there. I agree with you that I was surprised when Boss Landry Let me put it this way. When they lost Landry, I also thought that was seriously problematic. I think that the Titans defense has some splits, though. I mean, against the run, they've been very good. But if you look at their EPA per play, which is sort of like a better way of looking at yards per play, it's a production metric against design pass plays, they rank 29th in defense there. And that, to me, is where I'd be worried. Because if I'm choosing, can I have a strength on offense or a strength on defense? I'm sorry, a strength against a run or a strength against the pass. I would rather be better against the pass. And so, to me, I think that's a little bit of a concern. I do think that Simmons helped in both areas, and that's one of the reasons why they've been able to hang on, I guess, in some ways, without Landry. But I'm maybe less bullish on them going forward because of the pass weakness.
Now, with that being said, their offense, minus the run game, the passing game, mm-hmm. What does the analytics say about that? Because they've been an inept passing team, but they have done just enough during a game to get themselves over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, from an efficiency standpoint, mm-hmm. I think that their passing game has been okay. I mean, they rank 11th in EPA per play, and Tannehill is sitting there at 24th in QBR, so that's not great there. We have, there is a bit of a difference. That's obviously unideal. And I do think that, part of it probably is related to the run game. Like, normally I think that the idea of run game setting up the pass is overstated, but I think that that's been accurate in Tennessee over the last few years, where Henry just commanded so much attention that it really did help the pass game. I think as we've seen Henry decline, in my opinion, that of course is going to have some effects on the pass game too.
We're talking to Seth Walder from ESPN, the analytics department. Seth, you really got my attention with the Derrick Henry stuff, because that has been out there for a while. But here, you can imagine the faith that not only the team has in Derrick Henry, but the fans, the media, there's just a belief he's a special guy, that he is going to overcome the regular age curve of a running back, even despite the injury last year. Do you see anything with the first half, second half, that would give you some optimism? Because it does look like, at least with the general numbers, he sets the tone early in games. Everything looks good at halftime, and then for whatever reason, they haven't been able to produce anything in the second half.
I would say that I think that if you're looking for optimism, it's first half, second half in a totally different way in terms of the season, because I think the one pattern that we've seen through Henry's career is that he has picked it up as the season has gone along. And so there have been times when, even earlier, where he ended up having a great year, at the beginning part of the year, his rush yards over expectation weren't necessarily special, and then they were by the end of the year. To me, that's where, if you're a Titans fan looking for optimism, like, that's where I would put my faith. And I think that there is a chance that that could still happen. But I wouldn't bet on it.
It's interesting. It looks like they've squeezed out about as much production as you can get in the passing game, despite all of what we're talking about here. And on top of that, major concerns injury-wise on the offensive line, losing Taylor Lewan for the season, for example. So when you look at the offensive line, do you think they have enough there for the rest of the season going forward to get enough production?
I don't. You might be sensing that I am down on the Titans, I am not high on the Titans right now. I think that they are not a team that I would like to back from this point forward. They rank 22nd in pass block win rate for us, which is the metric where we measure how often someone on the offensive line is beaten within the first 2.5 seconds of a play. And that was a concern for me going into the year. I felt like Tennessee, we'd been conditioned because previously they'd had a good offensive line, and I just don't believe that's who they are anymore. I think that is a concern for me. The Henry stuff's a concern. I think the offensive line's a concern. You're looking at a team that no longer has an A.J. Brown, and that's a concern for me. So it's really the offense across the board that to me has me worried about the Titans.
All right, finish with this, Seth. In the AFC South, somebody's got to win the division. But what do your numbers tell you about who the best team is in the league going forward, or in that division going forward?
Numbers, like, and I agree with this, And I think that they have played not as well over the last couple of weeks, so there is some concern there. But to me, the fact that we saw a few strong games from Trevor Lawrence early on suggests to me growth. I think that their defense is pretty legit. And so I think that I do not have faith in what Indianapolis is doing. So I think that Jacksonville is the best team. I would not be surprised if we walk away at the end of this year thinking that Jacksonville was clearly the best team in that division.
All right. There you go. That's an interesting look at it. Hey, Seth, appreciate the time, and we'll do this again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Seth Walder, ESPN analytics expert, Jacksonville.
What have I been saying?
You've been saying it.
You said the analytics says Jacksonville is the best team in the division.
Let's discuss that coming up next. Terry Crisp at the bottom of the hour here on Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Some concern there. But to me, the fact that we saw a few strong games from Trevor Lawrence early on suggests to me growth. I think that their defense is pretty legit. And so I think that I do not have faith in what Indianapolis is doing. So I think that Jacksonville is the best team. I would not be surprised if we walk away at the end of this year thinking that Jacksonville was clearly the best team in that division.
Seth Walder, ESPN analytics expert, joining us in the last segment, calling it Jacksonville, the best team in the AFC South. Willie's been saying it. I'll give him credit. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Willie has been consistent on and I'll say this. I have thought that Jacksonville, I wanted to watch out for them this year. I thought they were a pretty good team. I'm not the analytics guy. I'm the eye test. I know what I see. Derek's probably more of the same. But you have been saying all year, look at the numbers, that they're all adding up, and Trevor Lawrence seems to be getting better and better.
Well, I don't know if I've been saying they're the best team. Statistically, mm-hmm. they have done the best. But as you know, Derek, mm-hmm. you got to know how to win. I think that they are the best, most – let's just say this. They have the highest ceiling. They have the most talent. They're younger. They're faster. But they're not smarter. Mm-hmm. They have lost some games that they should have won. And I think the Colts, to some degree, and definitely the Titans, they're you just get the sense that they're piecing it together with scotch tape and duct tape and barbed wire, and they're trying to claw and scratch. But the Titans know how to win. They're savvy. That's what it's going to come down to, is do they have just enough talent to stay ahead of the Jags this year? But I think everybody in the division's probably on some borrowed time. Look, the Jaguars have been so bad for so long. Sooner or later, even the Buccaneers of the 80s and the early 90s, who were so bad for 15 or 20 years, they finally got it right. And when they did, all of a sudden they were really good. When you pick first every year, or third or fourth, whatever they, sooner or later you're going to hit, especially if you get a coach that actually knows what he's doing for the first time. And
that's
a GM that has an idea of how to, you know, at some point you're going to get it. And it looks like the Jags have the makings of being a really good team. So can you hold them off for this year? I think that's still very doable. But you cannot deny that statistically they've done the best, but it hasn't equated to wins yet. But, we've still got a long way to go in the season.
Yeah, we do. And I think the key for them is they added some personnel that they needed mm-hmm. in the offseason, but they got the right head coach. I think Doug Peterson's a good head coach. He won a Super Bowl in Philadelphia. Carson Wentz was having the best season of his career. He gets hurt, and then you got Nick Foles that he's able to close the deal with. Now, Frank Reich was a part of that as the offensive coordinator. I definitely think that they worked well together, but Doug Peterson has always been viewed as this quarterback whisperer, and I feel like he's doing that with Trevor Lawrence. You got Travis Etienne that's starting to get things going. I think he's a talent after missing all of last year. Mm-hmm. And just getting further and further away from the Urban Meyer experiment that just went horribly wrong is going to be good for them. But like you said, there's a long way to go. I'm interested in the Titans matchup with Jacksonville because they haven't played yet. But if the Titans can take care of the Colts, get through them, then you can make the argument, if Jacksonville can start stringing some wins together, that it could be between the Titans and the Jags. But the Titans don't see the Jags until week 14. Mm-hmm. And then they see him again week 18.
And what is that Jags team going to look like? Now, their injuries could play a part, but could the light have gone on in some of these game management areas for Trevor Lawrence that he's let them down on, where they can't manage to find a way to beat Washington and Houston? You feel like they have a chance. Mm-hmm. Their ceiling is such that they might really be pretty good by the end of that year. But you have to cross that bridge when you come to it. Now, what did you guys make of some of the stuff that Seth said about the Titans? Like, he is not impressed with their statistics. Mm-hmm. However, the last couple years, the Titans have outperformed mm-hmm. their statistical model big time. Right? And you can say, look, they're trying to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Derrick Henry stuff, I mean, it didn't really surprise me because, again, that's something you've brought up quite a bit, and the analytics sites say that. But, you know, I even think just his normal numbers, like the yards per carry, and Derrick Henry yesterday was asked about, you haven't had the home run game yet, and he got a little chirpy about it, like, hey, it's coming. Like, but you can tell that he knows. Mm-hmm. He knows that it hadn't hit and it's bothering him. So I thought that was interesting what he said about Derrick Henry.
This team, I think the Titans are doing just enough to stay above water. And the good part about it is everybody else is just below water. And the Titans are probably, from a experience standpoint, they might be the oldest team in that division based on experience, quarterback at the helm. Because if you look at Houston, their quarterback only been there a couple of years. Indy, he just got there last year. Jacksonville, 2 years. The Titans, Ryan has been here, what, 6 years now? This unit has been together for a bit now. So they know how to win the close games. Jacksonville doesn't know how to win the close games yet, but they got a better roster. Eventually, if the Titans don't update their roster, Jacksonville's going to catch up with them and overtake them. Eventually, if Indianapolis don't find out what they're doing at quarterback and get some playmakers on the outside and fix that offensive line, sort of like the Titans, Jacksonville's going to jump over them as well. So Jacksonville's in a good place. The only problem with Jacksonville, like I said, they're a young team. That's the only thing that is getting them right now. They don't have enough guys that have won enough games in this league and know how to win when it comes. Even Christian Kirk, he was on a team in Arizona that just blew the whole second half of the season.
Yeah, they didn't know how to win.
Exactly.
They looked like a team that had more talent than the results. So not only is this Titans-Colts game huge, as we mm-hmm. know. I mean, you're battling to stay ahead of the Colts. That's been the battle for, you know, 3 or 4 years. Ever since, I don't know, basically since Mike Vrabel took over, that's been the pathway to an AFC South title. You got to beat the Colts, and they've done well. But the Jags are getting into this discussion now. So this is a huge game Sunday here. The Jets at the Jags. Very mm-hmm. intriguing game.
Oh,
two young teams that are trying to figure it out that do look like they're coming around talent-wise. So I'll tell you what, it's intriguing to see if the kind of the old wily vets, even though the Titans are trying to infuse youth, right? We've talked about that a lot. You're trying to get – they put a lot on Treylon Burks.
You say the Jets at the Jags? The Giants at the Jags.
Oh, Giants at the Jags. Well, the worst 5-1 team in America going down to the –
Well,
going down there.
What would you guess the line is?
Well, somebody took the Jags or took the Giants in the underdog picks yesterday, so it's, right. What, 2.5 or something like
three.
That?
Three. Yeah, Giants are a three-point dog on the road.
I kind of like the
– I would go with the G-men.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I'll bet you the Jags win.
Okay.
I'll take the Jags.
Well, the Jags need to win to stay on pace with what the Titans
I mean, that's true. It is kind of a – you're getting into must-win. But the thing – to wrap this up on the Titans, the thing that concerns me is the Colts this weekend – I'm going to put in it. It is winnable. Like either team,
the Colts game is winnable, or the Colts
this game this weekend for the Titans is a winnable game.
Okay,
they. I'm not saying they should win, but it is a winnable game.
It's going to go right down to the last part of the last quarter.
Then you go to Houston, but then Kansas City at Kansas City on a Sunday night, which is tough.
You think?
Who the hell knows what Denver's going to be by the time they get here? Then you got to go to Green Bay. Who the hell knows what they're going to be? And that's a Thursday night game, so you're going on a short week. Aaron Rodgers desperate at that point.
It looks a little more doable than it did at the beginning of the season.
Right, but,
right?
But you don't know. Like, we don't know if they're going to
exactly.
Like, because my whole point is you're going to be playing three teams in a row that I would put in the desperate category. Mm-hmm. Denver, Green Bay, Cincinnati, and then you got to go to Philly. And we know what
that
Philly
looks
is.
Different than it did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
When we were trying to size up the strength of schedule.
Once you get through all that, Jacksonville comes here. So, look, it's
tough road.
It's first place schedule. That's what it is. But a lot of unanswered questions for sure for the Tennessee Titans. There's some questions out there from the Nashville Predators as well. We will talk to the legend, Terrence Arthur Crisp. Terry Crisp coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, the game. But first, Derek, tell us about Cool Springs MD.
Yes, I will. To all my men listeners out there, I need to tell you something. I'm not, you know, dissing my women, but I'm just talking to the men because we need some help, okay? And I need to tell them to get to Cool Springs MD. Over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And that's Jeffrey Lodge and his wife, Daphne, along with that experienced staff, give the men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of Brentwood, Nashville, that's including yours truly, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. There's no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle. Men, what are you waiting on? I went there. You need to get there. I made my appointment. So you need to make your appointment with Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and Cool Springs MD today, not tomorrow. Today. So here's the number to make your appointment. 615-486-3458. That's 615-486-3458. Or go to their website at coolspringsmd.com.
Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and oh, how I love that music. Brass Bonanza bringing us back. That can only mean Terry Crisp is on the line with us.
Crispy!
The legend. Yes, the legend. Crispy, what's up? How you doing?
Gentlemen, how are you all doing? And I got my favorite phrase this morning to start out with for Willie Donick. All your fault. All your fault.
So, okay, we started the show talking about this, that a lot of the people were blaming
Crispy
Willie.
Stirring it up.
That Willie was getting blamed for last night, that mm-hmm. he jinxed them, and now Crispy is all but confirming that.
Yes.
Well, okay, why don't we ask the coach?
You haven't
okay.
come up with the tape, Willie, so I'm
I know,
going
I
by
haven't.
What Crispy's
I've been
saying
looking,
now.
And I have not been able to find it. So, at issue, Crispy, was our discussion during the intermission where I brought up to Mace and Howe that, hey, they're in the same position they were in two nights ago, up 3-1 at the end of two. So let's ask the coach. When you were in that spot and everybody remembered the game before, you're in the same position in the next game, did you talk about it or did you not need to talk about it?
You talk about it. You tell the players. You remind them of it, for crying out loud. You blew the last one. You don't blow this one, you go ahead. So, never mind pussyfooting around the subject. Never mind trying to avoid it. You're going into the third period. You damn well remind them that, hey, you don't blow two in a row like that. You don't do it. Hal Gill's right. Willie's right. The only thing that I think that you'd get with your Willie with the on was, oh, yeah, with 6 minutes to go. Oh, good. We got a shutout going. That's worth a shutout. That, Willie, that'll really get you in trouble, Willie.
Oh,
I'll
big
tell
time.
You right now.
Big time.
That one will get you.
Terry Crisp is with us, the legend. So how do you handle tomorrow? Philadelphia, look, that's a tough team. They've started off hot. John Tortorella's in there. You know how he is. He's not there to be your friend. He's there to be your coach. And so that's going to be a tough test for them. But right now, this team feeling a little down on themselves. John Hines has to try and rally the troops. The leadership group has to rally the troops. So what are you talking about with them today as they get ready for tomorrow against Philly?
Why would they feel down on themselves? I mean, The fans don't feel sorry for them. I don't feel sorry for them. You guys don't. So what right do they have to feel sorry for themselves? That, to me, is an expression I just distaste. Unbelievable. That these guys, and I was laughing, and I love D-Mace, by the way, buddy. When you guys, when you're talking, you ask them about motivation. And I was listening, I was coming home in the car, and I said, you know what? He hit the nail right in the head to what I've been saying as a coach, as a player all along. There's no such thing as coaches motivating players. You can put a game plan out there. You can put your power play, your penalty kill, your breakouts, your regroups, all that stuff to do it. And that's what a coach's job is. D-Mace, you hit it, self-motivation. Mm-hmm. You can't climb inside a guy's body or his mind. And if they can't do it, then find another job. Because I always said, you know what? You want to know what motivation is? And then they used to say, well, you, coach, you were a rough coach. You were a tough coach. Yeah, I was. Yes, I was. And I said, do I know one of the best motivations in life is fear? And they all look at me like I got two heads. But think about this. If you're a man or a woman out there, you know what the motivation for fear is? That you make money to pay your mortgage, to keep a house over your family's head, or to afford a car, maybe one for your wife or you also. How about college education? Can you afford your children? Or medical bills? That's motivation with fear. The rest of it, from sports and that, you don't have that. That's all looked after. Now it comes from within. And I think right now we're looking at the fact that these players, and I'm going to say it again, Willie, and you've heard me say this, put that big mirror the size of a wall as they walk out of that dressing room, and every player has to look into that mirror and say, what do I have to do tonight to win? What do I have to do to win and help my team win?
At Crispy, I think you have to hope that your leaders, your top players, are the ones that set the tone, right? That's what I kept waiting for last night in the third period, is somebody make a play to stop the bleeding. Somebody make a play to turn the tide a little bit. That's what they had to all be frustrated. Believe me, they were all, nobody's more frustrated than the players themselves that it didn't happen. They know it's got to happen, but it's got to start with your top players, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're the ones that should be getting the ice time. They're the ones that should be, when the power play comes out, that should be your best. And our penalty killers have been doing a yeoman job, but no wonder they're beat into the ice. I mean, the dumb penalties we're taking, the lazy penalties we're taking, the selfish penalties we're taking have got to stop. And our goaltenders can only do so much. And I don't want to hear one word about Lankin and not doing his job last night. He saved our bacon again and again and again. So let's get that off the board right now. Same as stuff. But you know what happens? And you think about this. Just maybe over the years, with Pekka in goal and now Saros coming up for him, those two guys covered up a lot of sins, a lot of mistakes, a lot of things that we were doing that had to be corrected, but they bailed us out. And when that doesn't happen, these mistakes are really blatant and really costly.
Yeah, they definitely show up a lot more. They're not getting erased by great goaltending. Crispy, you coached, when you started off with the Flames and you won a championship, it was a very high-scoring league. You guys were powerful. You could win a lot of different ways, but man, you guys revved up offense. And then you watched the league as, you know, you went to Tampa, it became more of a defensive league, right? And then when you started your career as an analyst for the Predators, it seemed like nobody could score. Now it's kind of cycling back, isn't it? The goal scoring is way up. What's it like to coach when you know, when you're up a couple of goals, that the way the game is played, it's not over by any stretch?
You know what? Common sense. Common sense comes in. You heard, I heard you guys talking with the Titans about their defense and our defense. And the year that I went into coach in Calgary, I was the one criteria, the one thing that they told me, my GM that hired me, he said, we need a Stanley Cup here. Our owners have all the money they'll ever need. They don't want money. They want a ring. Your job as a head coach is to win a ring, not to win Gaylord. So I went with it, and I had a great team left to me by Badger Bob Johnson. They were a great team and powerful team. But the one thing that Scotty Bowman taught me and Fred Shiro taught me as a player with 10 years with those gentlemen were, you can have all the player you want. Defense is going to win you what you need. The year we went and won the Stanley Cup in 89, we as a team, we played the Montreal Canadiens in the finals that year. Guess who the two best defensive teams were in the NHL? Montreal number one, Calgary number two. So, yeah, you have firepower. But you know what? The biggest thing is defense. And the best defense is offense. You learn how to forecheck properly. You learn late in the game. You don't back off. You don't play not to lose. You play to win. And you play for a full 60 minutes. And that's what I see our guys doing. Like, we'll play 40 like you guys won first and second periods. Then suddenly we go into And I'm almost definite. I'm almost sure the coaches are not telling the guys, okay, guys, this don't work, huh? We just sort of said, no. You got to keep pushing and pushing hard and even harder now, but smart. Pushing hard is one thing, but push hard smart.
Yeah, and now what's going to be my question, Crispy, in regards to this Predators team from a defensive standpoint, because we did have Paul on at the beginning of the season, I believe, and talked about, is this the type of team, did you construct the type of team that John Hines wanted? Did it fit his personality? And in a roundabout way, yes, that's what the answer was. But even with this roster, do you think at this point they're constructed to play that physical type of a brand of hockey that's going to, you know, if they're not playing well offensively, the defense will pick it up for them?
Yeah, they are. You know, we have the boys out there that want to do it. Mm-hmm. We have the guys that want to play tough and strong and hard. And most of them do. And the biggest thing is that they got to carry it out from the dressing room onto the ice and go to work. I heard William talk. I've said it with people here that last year, the herd line, they set the tempo. They made it, and they were doing it. This year, they're not quite back on the game. Last night, back into it again. But having said that, and I heard Willie Donick talking about this, your big guns have to be your cannons. If your big guns are firing every night, you're going to win most of your games. And I don't like this phrase, but it's used out there. If your pop guns are there, and they're going to come every night and work for you, you know you're going to get your work ethic from them. Your cannons have got to show up, and they got to be firing, but they got to be firing effectively. Like last night, I heard Willie and Mason them talking, and you can almost tell in their voices and their taste that they were frustrated up in the booth, but they can only say so much and do so much. But with 14 minutes or 12 minutes left in the game and your guns have one shot, no shots, two shots, that's not going to get the job done.
Crispy, before we let you go, you know how this goes, having been a coach. You know, you have people that when things aren't going well, they're screaming for the coach. But a lot of thing that I hear out of Preds fans is they want to see some of the youngsters that are in Milwaukee. Some of these guys like Parson and that you saw in training camp, Afanasyev, that, you know, have shown some flashes, but maybe not shown that they're quite there yet. But at what point do you think about that if you're John Hines of Tomasino, you know, giving some of these young guys an opportunity to see what they could do if some of your veteran players aren't getting the job done?
You know what? I'm not privy to what the coaches do. I'm not privy to what they think or their plans. But if you're asking me as a coach, I'd say right now, some of the players playing here should start to worry. And I can guarantee you in my mind that the coaching staff and David Poile and the scouts are sitting there saying, okay, we started this. We had this game plan. If it's not working, and you know David and the coach, they're not afraid. John Hines is not afraid to make a move. You remember a year ago or 2 years ago when he had to come in here and bench some of the guns and some of the cannons, and he did it and got their attention and then talked through with them and brought them back. And that's the same thing now. So, yeah, I think right now some of the players here should be looking over their shoulders and saying, okay, is the ones you mentioned coming up, or is there another one down there that is going to come up and get the job done? Definitely.
Crispy, appreciate it. It's good to talk to you, and we will see you tomorrow at the rink, as you like to say.
You know what? You're right. And fellas, a lot of stuff changes. Power play changes. You know what never changes? Our fans. The base. Right. The loyal legion. They bring it every night for us. So if they can bring it every night, surely to heck we can join them and bring it too.
Absolutely. Crispy, have a great rest of your day. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
Yep.
Absolutely. Terry Crisp, the legend, joining us.
If you haven't been to a game yet, they have this great intro. You got to get there right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's Crispy reading off like a motivational speech, and he ends it with "Bring the passion."
Yep.
It is awesome. It will get you the goosebumps going. They did a great job with that. So be ready to bring it Saturday night in Smashville.
Appreciate Crispy for joining us, and don't worry, even though he's retired, he's still going to join us.
He brings
time
the passion.
To time.
He's still got the passion.
Oh,
of course.
He brought the passion there, yeah, for sure. Speaking of passion, join Big Joe Dubin and Elijah Campbell tonight for the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy from 6 to midnight. They'll preview the big games, take you through a night of high school football around the mid-state. It's the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Awesome talking to Terry Crisp, the legend, who again is going to join us from time to time. You'll probably hear him on a broadcast or two as well. He can't stay retired forever.
He loves the game.
He's got the passion. He brings the passion. But I thought he was spot on. I mean, eventually, if you're the players, the big guns, as he put it, you got to look yourself in the mirror. And, you know, we were talking to Seth Walder about the analytics when it comes to the Titans. Willie, the analytics when it comes to the Predators, they're not very good either.
No, they're telling the story of the team right now. You know, they're 2-3-1, and their record is 2-3-1. I mean, the analytics point to that. So let's go a little closer. I know there's some easy things to throw out there. Why are they playing Cole Smith? You know, it's easy to blame it on those guys. You heard Terry Crisp say it. You know, the guys on the back half of the roster, they're gonna do what they can. But at the end of the day, I can remember vividly a discussion I had with Peter Laviolette one time. We were in New York, and they were coming off a tough game, and the Predators were struggling. And I said, hey, you know, Austin Watson and I can't remember who else was playing on the fourth line. Maybe it was Colton Sissons at the time. I was like, hey, those guys played a good game. What did you think? This was not on the air or anything. And he said, good for them. They did. They were our best players. But he said, if they're our best players, the Nashville Predators are in trouble. And his point was, it's like coming out of a Titans game and saying, hey, Kyle Phillips played a really good game. Okay, good for him. But if that's the case every week, the Titans are screwed, right? It's you've got to have mileage over the long haul from your top players. Right now, let's start at the top. Roman Josi has 1 point. It's not a Roman Josi-like start to the season.
Not good.
Why is that? Look, there's a lot of things that you could throw out as a theory. Was there the trip to Bern was such a wonderful, amazing experience. But was there a little bit of, on the downside, just decompressing a little bit from that? I don't know. You can theorize all you want. My money's on Roman Josi over 82 games. I think he'll be fine. Right now, he's not clicking that much. The D pair of Ryan McDonagh and Matthias Ekholm that looks so good on paper, I love it long term. I would stick with it. They have a lot of faith in those two players. Those two guys have been great defensemen in this league for a long time. Right now, their numbers aren't very good. Not at all. And I feel like it will get better. John Hines was talking to us yesterday. He does not feel, he didn't feel going into the last game that it was an issue of line combinations or that type of thing, or not having the right guys in the lineup. It's just having your guys do what they're supposed to do. Play smart, play together, play effectively. The first line, Philip Forsberg, Crispy referenced it. He didn't get a shot on goal until midway through the third period. That's not a Philip Forsberg kind of game. Philip Forsberg is usually a guy that's going to get 4, 5, 6 shots on goal. He's going to get 9, 10 shot attempts. He's the top goal scorer. it wasn't that line wasn't driving the play like a first line needs to night in and night out. So yeah, I can go on with this stuff. You know, the numbers are echoing this for sure. So the Herd line scored a couple goals last night. That was encouraging. They got off to a little slow start, but I like what I'm seeing there.
A quick question. This is from Bryant, Fierce Falcon on Twitter. What do you guys think about slotting Glass between Forsberg and either Duchesne or Granlund?
Well, Cody Glass is playing well. There's no question about it. I think I have enough faith in Mikael Granlund and Ryan Johansson that they'll get it done. But Cody Glass, it would be a good problem if he could push to be in the top six. Fair to say, right? That's like analytically, people were saying, well, why is Cole Smith in? Last night, the best line that they had analytically was Glass, Sherwood, and Sherwood and Cole Smith. Those were the best three analytically. But it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. That doesn't mean you put them out with the game on the line. When the game's on the line, you got to have your best players out there and say, you guys have to get it done. But this team's going to sink or swim with the best players out there when the game's on the line. So I hope that Glass continues to push because he is playing well. He is an improved player. The year last year in Milwaukee did him a lot of good. So let's hope that continues. Now it's up to him to keep pushing. Keep pushing the envelopes to where they can't help but try to give him a bigger role.
Chase William, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Coming up next, we'll talk to our buddy Trey Wingo. It's been a while. Half Forgotten History, that's his podcast. Also does some stuff with Caesars as well. We'll talk some NFL with him. But can you beat Vegas this football season? Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head-to-head with the best odds makers in Las Vegas. There's no fancy computer algorithms, no guys across the pond setting the lines for American sports. No. Just the best team of odds makers in the business behind the counter at the Superbook in Las Vegas. Plus, they feature some of the best odds, boosts, and promo bets anywhere. Right now, looking at the line between the Titans and the Colts, it was 3. Now it's 2.5. Titans still the favorite. But something to keep an eye on. You can place a bet there. Just download that Superbook Sports app or visit Superbook.com and you can start your battle against Vegas right now. Visit Superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789.